Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 30th of May, 2014. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Jemima given new lease of life, Tories tighten their grip on City Council, and UKIP sights on general election. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Mariah?
Jemima given new lease of life. A brave little girl is firmly on the long road to a better life after her parents' decision to take her to America for a life-changing operation. Six-year-old Jemima Siverett from Otterbourne, who was born with quadriplegia, a form of cerebral palsy, has been given a new lease of life after a specialist surgery, said Mum and Dad, Joe and Andrew. Jemima needed surgery on her spine in the hope she would eventually walk unaided. Mr. and Mrs. Siverett and brothers Ollie and Freddie helped to fundraise more than £100,000 to take her to the US. And now the Hiltingbury Junior Schoolgirl is showing the first signs of independence. The family from Norlands Drive started campaigning last September to get Jemima to Missouri to have a selective dorsal rhizotomy, which involved severing nerves in the base of Jemima's spine that sent incorrect messages to her legs. Surgery went well, and now only the correct nerves are responding, which has meant with intense physiotherapy, Jemima might one day be able to walk unaided. The surgery wasn't available to Jemima here in the UK, as she did not meet the specific guidelines. But Mrs. Siverett said the trip to America was worth every mile and penny. It's given her a new lease of life, and to see the benefits already is hugely rewarding, she said. Straight away, she was more flexible, but also relatively weak because of the surgery. Now we need to build up on that so that she can do as much as she can on her own. Before, she could sit on the floor cross-legged okay, but now she can sit on a chair with some help, which, while it might not seem a big thing, is such a help. Going to a friend's house where she can sit in a chair will just mean she's not so restricted all the time. It's like teaching a toddler again. All children progress at different rates, but we're hoping by her next birthday she can walk with her frame pretty much unaided. But now the family have one more bump in the road. Jemima's been visiting the Rainbow Centre in Fareham since she was two, which, because of a lack of funding, has been battling the threat of closure, which Mrs. Siverett said would hugely affect Jemima's development. However, the centre has recently raised more than £150,000 to help it carry on helping people like Jemima for the immediate future. It's a key part of the rehabilitation, and there is nowhere else, she said. It's her space to be free. If they close, she will have to have private physio, but it's not integrated with other areas of her learning. And there are two lovely pictures. One is of the whole family, and the other is of Jemima on her own, looking very lively and smiling.
Tories tighten their grip on City Council. Inroads made, but no seats for UKIP. There weren't many purple UKIP rosettes on show, but the party has arrived as a political force in the Winchester district. The anti-EU party gained three second-place finishes in the elections counted at the Guildhall last Friday and were only once knocked into last place. They stood in 11 of the 19 contests, and although they didn't directly affect any result, they raked in more than 3,100 votes. Happiest, however, were the Conservatives, who tightened their control of the council, edging ahead of their main rivals, the Liberal Democrats. Before the poll, they each stood at 27. When the last result was announced, the Tories were on 28 seats, up one, whilst the Lib Dems had slipped two to 25 after also losing a seat to Labour. The Tories had been on the verge of taking overall control with the crucial 29th seat, but their candidate in the Alresfords, Lisa Griffiths, was just unable to oust Margot Power, falling short by 79 votes. Her 1,098 was the fifth highest of any candidate. UKIP had a respectable showing, finished second in three wards and last only once. They polled more than 600 votes in Denmead. Chris Barton Bridden, secretary of the Winchester branch of UKIP, said, "We've done pretty well. It's down to continuous work by a few people, but our numbers are growing." Labour now has three councillors, their highest since 2004, with Clive Gosling winning in St John and All Saints ward that covered Highcliffe and Winall estates. Conservative leader Rob Humby, who has replaced the retiring Keith Wood, said, "I'm delighted. The whole team have worked hard. We're now the largest group on the council." It was the fifth time lucky for Helena Osborne, a mother of one in her 30s, who won the St Barnabas seat from the Lib Dems after a recount. The Tory cheers were the loudest of the day. She said, "It's so nice to be finally here. It's perseverance. I'm passionate about changing communities, so I keep on going." Labour leader Chris Pyne said, "We are delighted but not surprised, as we were quietly confident. Our team hit every house in the St John's ward." Kelsey Learney, Labour Dem leader, put a bright gloss on the results, saying her party had polled more votes across the district as a whole. "The Tories are still in overall control, but we've still got influence," she said. Independent Karen Barrett, former Lib Dem councillor, gained 433 votes in St Paul ward. "I hadn't expected to win," she said. "I stood to see how a single person campaigning for 4 weeks and spending less than £100 would do. It makes me wonder what I could do in a year." Patrick Fansett has become one of the youngest ever councillors, winning Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm the day before his 23rd birthday. Turnout was boosted by coinciding with the Euro elections and three times topped 50% in the Alresfords, St Barnabas and Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm. The 54% in St Barnabas shows how hard the parties fought the campaign. In a by-election at Alresford Town Council, former city councillor Annie Saunders beat Steve Deeming and the former town council chairman Robin Atkins.
And staying with a recent election, this one's the Euro elections, and it's headed UKIP sights on general election. UKIP has vowed to build on the party's European success at next year's general election and have a Hampshire town firmly in their sights. The Eurosceptic Party were the big winners on a dramatic night at Southampton's Guildhall last Sunday, which saw 10 MEPs elected for the South East. UKIP's recent surge continued as the party seized four seats, while Conservatives won three and Labour, the Green Party and the Liberal Democrats won each. Now the party is focusing on next year's general election, with Eastleigh one of the target seats it hopes to take next May. Party leader Nigel Farage, Janice Atkinson, Diane James and Hampshire County Councillor Ray Finch were UKIP's four MEPs, as the party secured 751,439 votes, up 13.29% on the last election in 2009. The Tories lost one seat as their share fell 3.8%, while the Lib Dems were only saved from a national wipeout in Europe by Catherine Bearder, who was one of those elected in the South East. Speaking after the results were confirmed, Mr Farage told the audience at the Guildhall, "The People's Army of UKIP have spoken tonight and delivered just about the most extraordinary result in British politics for 100 years. Mrs. James, who came second in last year's Eastleigh parliamentary by-election, said, "To come from where we were in 2009 with two MEPs and to now have four, 5 years later, is just a smashing result, and I don't suppose David Cameron will be very happy." She added, "I am sure that the party decision will be to put the 20 MEPs into the top 20 target seats for the general election." Nerj Deva, one of the three Tory MEPs re-elected, said, "Conservative voters have sent us a message saying to the party, listen to what we want, which is a referendum on the European Union, and we need change. It has reinforced what a number of us have been saying, that the European Union is a rickety, rocketry, 70-year-old contraption, and it needs reform and it needs change." Labour's Annalise Dodds was elected with an increased share of the vote from 2009. The Lib Dems' sole MEP, Catherine Bearder, said, "We need to analyse what happened. It hasn't been good for us as a party, and I've lost some very good colleagues." Keith Taylor was re-elected as Green MEP, and this is accompanied by a photograph, a close-up of Nigel Farage, facing microphones as he arrives in Southampton Airport. This time, no beer in his hand.
That concludes the headline news, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Arculus, Marion Mabsey Arculus, peacefully at Westacre Nursing Home. Bevan, Don Bevan, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Luff, Betty Luff, peacefully aged 85. Russell, Roy Russell, peacefully at home, aged 84. Sad, Kenneth Douglas Sad, peacefully aged 86. Sampson, Barbara Denise Sampson, peacefully aged 86. And Wyeth, Anthony David Wyeth, peacefully aged 82. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment this week is written by Canon Rowley Ream and is titled "The Shambles That We Call Democracy." There were not many voters at my polling station when I went. Myself and one other, to be exact, and the other was lost. She had forgotten her polling card and couldn't be found on the list. No one could check on where she was supposed to be. She thought that she should be at Hampshire County Council's offices. Unfortunately, we happened to be at the City Council offices at the Guildhall. It's easy to be wise after the event. The street she lived in, I discover, is in the St Bartholomew Ward, for which there are three polling stations, none of them being the HCC offices. It might have dawned on me that the County Council would be unlikely to host City Council elections. But in an effort to be helpful, I duly directed her to the wrong place, in the hope that she would be able to exercise her right to vote. If that woman seemed less than equipped to do her duty, I confess that I fared worse. I hadn't even heard of some of the parties standing in the other election being held for the European Parliament. My vote was based on a brief muse on the way to the polling station, rather than deep reflection. I'd given more thought to my summer holidays than to the changing face of Europe. This is the shambles we call democracy. It's not that the system is run badly, far from it. We are encouraged and enabled to vote. There is plenty of free debate and quality discussion across all the media. The trouble is that people like me are trusted, and I don't rarely do enough to justify that trust. It is often said that democracy is flawed, but better than the alternatives. It is hard to disagree with that as we look at events unfolding in Thailand. More than that, though, democracy has a Christian justification. The good news that Christians attempt to believe and live, often not very successfully, is that even though we are often daft and ignorant, inclined to follow our own self-interest and often motivated by fear and guilt, there is a place for us as political stakeholders. We are called to be members of a dawning kingdom. Democracy may be a shambles, but if we all pitch in and commit to learning along the way, that's a good start.
Now we move on to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and it's from Councillor Keith Chapman, who is the HCC Executive Member for Culture and Recreation. HCC continues to invest in the arts. Sir, with the school half-term here, some of us may be taking the opportunity to enjoy a festival, see a show, or take part in the arts. It's pleasing, therefore, to note that participation in the arts and heritage in Hampshire remains high. This is due to our continued investment, despite constraints on public sector budgets. We remain absolutely committed to supporting arts, heritage and culture in Hampshire. While government grant to councils is reduced, we are adopting innovative and creative ways to ensure this support continues. The national campaign for the art is highlighting the importance of funding for the arts and urging councils to increase their spending to 50p per head. Of course, that's just one measurement. Our funding is supplemented by a range of grants and help in some kind to ensure that services continue to flourish. With the invaluable support of district and borough councils, Renaissance, the National Museum Development Programme, the Arts Council England, the Heritage Lottery Fund, and a growing team of enthusiastic volunteers, Hampshire County Council continues to ensure that its 18 arts centres and museums and heritage sites provide activities for over 600,000 people a year. We are currently working with Winchester City Council to establish a cultural trust for Hampshire that will support our bold ambitions for culture well into the future, and the County Council has so far this financial year given more than £800,000 to other arts organisations and museums which reach many thousands of residents. Arts development programmes continue, such as the rural touring programme Hog the Limelight, a major community participation success delivered in its communities areas across the county, directly supported by 600 volunteers in these communities. This group collectively selected, managed, marketed and presented some 80 performances to over 5,000 people. HOG is both county council funded and supported by a grant aid from a number of district and borough councils. The 50p for campaign is right to value and highlight the role of the culture and heritage in our communities, but the measure does not fully reflect the strength and breadth of commitment and support in a county like Hampshire. Our organisation remains committed to this key area, but in a way that encourages innovation, partnership, inward investment and community engagement at a time when public spending is under such huge pressure. And that's from Councillor Keith Chapman.
Jonathan Greatrick says, "Grumpy George makes me mad. Sir, why print the drivel written last week by George Hayter, the grumpy old man? Leave him off the list. His mower was disturbing other folk, but the aircraft taking off and landing at Southampton were disturbing too. OK, so the ice cream van jingle was a little loud, but also a bit of fun. Does he also complain about fireworks which go on for days in the autumn? This country used to be great. The bombs fell and people were inconvenienced. Now we've developed a sissy state of silly articles about a three-second jingle, and it makes me mad." That is Jonathan Greatrix of Winchester.
"Space to perform urgently needed. Sir, the thought that the proposed station development in Winchester could be infested with yet more hectares of dull commercial property without any consideration for the social and cultural well-being of future Wintonians is hugely depressing. A mid-sized hall of about 400 seats in central Winchester is desperately needed by the many performing arts organisations, amateur and professional, flourishing in and around the city. Richard York's suggestion for a new performance space within the development is timely And, as Judith Martin has pointed out in her letter May the 22nd, he is a well-qualified advocate of such a scheme. While applauding his call to arms, I suggest the following priorities. It must not be a multi-purpose hall. The auditorium should be acoustically excellent and properly light and soundproof. It should be visually exciting both inside and out, as befits the cultural aspirations of the city. It should have permanent, comfortable, raked seating. There should be appropriate air conditioning. There should be spacious and appropriate front-of-house facilities for the audience before, during and after performance. There should be good parking transport links and car parking facilities nearby. There will be much to learn from other modern performance spaces in Hampshire, such as Basingstoke's Anvil and Southampton's Turner Sims Concert Hall. And careful studies of these and other facilities, large and small, should be made. Commitment to a scheme is urgently needed, even in these austere times. I urge all interested groups and individuals to lobby their local representatives without delay. Bruce Edwards, Brassey Road, Winchester.
And Sarah Robinson writes, they've listened but don't like... Sir, I listened to the Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate Jackie Porter's comments on BBC Radio after their election losses on Friday about the public not listening to the Lib Dem message, and I really must seek to disagree with her. The British public have heard that Liberals refusing to see anything wrong with the way the EU is being run, scaremongering about the loss of 3 million jobs and sticking their heads in the sand over the strain on public services by ever-rising immigration as our economy is being revived. The public have listened and they do not like what they heard. From Sarah Robinson of Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas.
And inevitably a letter to the Chronicle on the subject of UKIP, and it's from Richard Grant. UKIP could be in for a big shock. Sir, Captain Mannering, Nigel Farage and his dad's army are in for a massive shock if they think they will find it easy to make a breakthrough into Parliament. They will have to find some policies which make sense. It won't be about leaving the EU. Many of their MEPs are also their PPCs for the general election, so changes will happen should any take a seat. I make no apology for backing the Liberal Democrats over our membership of the European Union. They have never said the EU is perfect, and we do need changes. The only way to achieve that is to be a full member. Captain Farage may shout the odds, but now, faced with real opposition from Labour and most Tories, and don't write off the Lib Dems, he is in for a tense 12 months. The media will now examine the workings of UKIP, having previously targeted the Lib Dems. And business must also now confirm that to back UKIP to leave the EU is the worst result for Britain. It will lead to massive unemployment and increasing debt, and we won't have any support of the EU to bail us out. Nick Clegg made the right moves to endeavour to show the voting public that we need the EU more than they need us. We should be leading, not leaving. The Liberal Democrats go back to the Liberals and, before that, the Whigs. They've been around since the 1600s. They will bounce back. And to the 70% of the people who did not vote, well, they really ought to. To everyone who lives here, ask yourselves, were your families at one time immigrants? Britain has always been European. There is ample scope for centre-ground Conservative, Labour and Green Party members to defect to the Liberal Democrats. All is far from lost. If you don't agree with all their policies, get them changed via membership. And that is Richard Grant, Biston Close, Burley.
Traffic lights don't go with the flow. Sir, as a former resident and frequent traveller to the fair city of Winchester, I am fully aware of its traffic problems. On Tuesday morning last week, the traffic lights at the busy junction of Drury Street, City Road, North Walls and Hyde Street were not working. But what immediately caught my attention as I approached said junction was the huge improvement in traffic flow with no delays or queues. Traffic planners, take note. Adrian Bright, Westfield Road, Southampton.
Navigation needs a danger notice. Sir, Garnier Road car park is a pleasant place to be beside the Itchen Navigation, but some folk do not realise there's a danger. There is no notice to warn them, particularly dog owners, that rowing takes place on the canal. Strangers and even locals throw balls or sticks into the canal there for the dogs to fetch, without their realising that a boat might be coming through the bridge very fast and a dog in the water would not be easily seen. Whether the boat is a single scull or an eight, it could not be stopped quickly. Will somebody responsible please put up a notice warning people to look out for boats before they let their dogs or children go in for a swim? And that's from Rosemary Howland of Winchester.
And this letter is accompanied by a picture of Bushfield Down, covered in snow, really rather handsome, with a few eager walkers. It's entitled A Campaign to Rival Twyford Down, and it's from Chris Gillam. So when William Cobbett, in his Rural Ride, said of Winchester's landscape that it was the finest in England, he described in particular the relationship of the valley meadows to the many chalk hills. After the loss of Twyford Down to Mrs. Thatcher's road-building megalomania, only two of those great chalk hills remain visually unsullied, St. Catherine's Hill and Bushfield Down. Soon, if the Church of England and the City Council have their way, only St. Catherine's will remain. After Barbara Guthrie's long and gallant battle against big money to try to protect the undoubted public amenity interest of this area, the High Court decision opens the way for the property developing arm of the Church of England to build whatever monstrosity it thinks will make it the most money. If people want to see the future of Bushfield, they should steel themselves to go and look at the abomination of Solstice Park on the A303 at Amesbury. Nobody should doubt this. It is precisely the sort of development the Church Commissioners spelt out as their ambition at Winchester's core strategy inquiry in 2012. The City Council brought this all about with its vain and ludicrous ambition of putting a knowledge park on the down. The inspector at the inquiry, under central government direction to pursue the growth agenda at whatever cost, simply stated that if it is a development site, then it can be for any development, inevitably of the kind one gets near motorways, mega sheds, hypermarkets, and drive-through burger bars. This has to be stopped. We need a new campaign to rival that of Twyford Down. The irony and the pity is that the Church of England, with the cathedral's much-missed Canon Walker, was the only establishment body to support the Twyford Down campaign. Now the Church of England is the destroyer. And that's Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
David Selby's letter suggests why not combine bus and rail stations. Sir, I agree with Maurice Cherrett about the regrettable removal of a bus station from the Silver Hill project. If this decision is final, what about a bus station as part of the new railway station development? It could encourage greater coordination between road and rail services and the P&R service through the stations, as at present would provide easy access into the city centre. I stand to be corrected, but I see very little evidence of a coherent and coordinated transport plan for the city, where elements of the bus services come under the aegis of HCC, and the control of car parks is very much the concern of WCC. Do we want better and more frequent bus services or bigger car parks? It would not be sensible to promote both at the same time. Apart from a local MP who, it appears, does not use public transport while in London, where he would have encountered some splendid bus stations, most of your correspondents seem to favour the retention of a bus station. One final thought. What is the current evidence to support a commercial development at Silver Hill, while the Brook Centre struggles to find long-term tenants and there is an increase in online shopping? What we don't want is a commercial centre around the Guildhall, which would denude the High Street of many of its shops. What is the overall plan for the future of transport, housing, commerce, manufacture and education for Winchester? If there is one, it has been well hidden. If there isn't, why not? The government of the city seems to be reactive rather than proactive. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. That's 01962 830 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Glancing to the past, we now begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And this is from May the 30th, 1814. Post-war issues. As the negotiation with France following the end of the Napoleonic War branches out into detail, difficulties of various kinds must be expected to arise. It's said that Monsieur Talleyrand has started many objections against the introduction of English manufactures on the footing of a treaty of 1786. All reasonable modifications ought to be acceded to on our part. It would not be a wise policy in us to hold up Louis XVIII to his people as sovereign incapable of maintaining their just rights. On the other hand, we ought not to cede an inch of territory to her until she has agreed to an equitable commercial treaty. And the second piece is a numerous and respectable meeting of the inhabitants of Gosport and Alverstoke took place on Thursday when a petition to Parliament against the proposed alteration in the Corn Laws was determined on. Resolutions were passed unanimously that the measure would greatly enhance the price of bread and produce the most serious consequences to the country. Some of the consequences dwelt upon in the petition are an increase of the poor rates to stimulate emigration among the mechanics, a non-reduction of the price of labour, thereby preventing our manufacturing goods from being on a par with those of other nations.
And this is 100 years ago, May the 30th, 1914, and two items here at that date. First one is farewell to Hamel. Mr. Gustav Hamel, one of the world's most famous aviators, and whose recent daring exhibitions at Southampton and Winchester will long be remembered, has, we regret to record, lost his life in the Channel. Mr. Hamel left the Via Coublay aerodrome near Paris early on Saturday morning with the intention of flying to Hendon to take part in the aerial derby. An aeroplane, which is believed to have been his, was sighted at 12:30, flying in the direction of Calais. From Saturday evening until Tuesday, warships scoured the Channel, but returned to Dover without success. And the second item. At the Wilts Assizes on Thursday, before Mr. Justice Ridley, Walter James White, 22, house director, decorator, that makes more sense, doesn't it? House decorator, was indicted for the willful murder of Frances Priscilla Hunter at Swindon on April the 29th. The jury found a verdict of guilty, with a strong recommendation to mercy on the grounds of prisoner's youth. The young man was brought back to Winchester Prison, where he had been under detention for safe custody previous to his trial. Executions do not at present take place in any Wiltshire prison, and should the sentence of the law be carried into effect, White will be hung at Winchester.
And there are two items from 50 years ago, dated May the 30th, 1964, and the first is a letter dealing with cathedral respect. Sir, as a Wintonian, I have a love and great respect for the cathedral. the Avenue and Close are one of the very few peaceful retreats where one can sometimes enjoy a quiet stroll. But what with the visual blot on the scene of the new hotel, combined with scores of people picnicking and sprawling on the grass, it hardly seems at times like cathedral precincts. On my ears recently fell the hideously raucous sounds of mechanised talk, so-called music and jazzy singing more suitable to a fairground, and along came two young women, one carrying a transistor radio. Surely some attitude of respect should be observed in such surroundings. And the second item, deep concern at the continued willful damage to the seats in the Avenue was expressed at the monthly meeting of the Alresford trustees. It was stated that over the past 2 years, approximately £100 has been spent on the repair of the seats, and it was resolved that further repairs should be carried out.
And from 25 years ago, June the 2nd, 1989, Nalgo meeting. At a well-attended meeting of the Hampshire County branch of Nalgo, the local government workers' union, last Thursday, members overwhelmingly rejected the employer's final offer of 7%, abolition of national grades and relaxation of national agreements to allow more flexible working. The employer's final offer represents a cut in pay in real terms, says the association. Members also overwhelmingly voted for an immediate ballot and campaign for industrial action in furtherance of Nalgo's claim for 12% or £21,200, whichever is the greater. And the second item is, builders want to put up townhouses on a site now thought to have been inhabited since early times and to contain important Roman remains, a planning inquiry was told yesterday. The site for the six houses is fronting Edgar Road at its junction with St James's Lane, just outside the old city walls. City Council reasons for objecting to the plan included the importance of the site, which is said to need time and resources to excavate, examine, and record remains.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Ros and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian. Thank you, Ros.
Thank you. Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment this week is headed "Interesting Times as General Election Nears." There's an old Chinese saying about being cursed to live in interesting times. There has been much recently for a wise Chinese philosopher to ponder. UKIP polled more than 3,000 votes across the Winchester district in the city council elections last Thursday. There was an expression of anger that other parties cannot ignore, especially the Liberal Democrats, who have lost their position as the party of protest. In the circumstances, the Lib Dems will be relieved to have only lost 2 seats. The Conservatives will be happy, especially as UKIP took votes from across the spectrum. However, UKIP is now clearly becoming a major force with the momentum to become more influential. There was another protest in Alresford on Tuesday night when 500 people packed a meeting to discuss development in the town. They clearly told the town council that they do not want to see it off Sun Lane. The question is, if not at Sun Lane, then where? Relying on windfall sites to provide the 386 homes by 2031 is too willy-nilly and leaves too much to chance. The problem is that the issue has been thrashed around now for several years with relatively little public interest. And the deadline is approaching when the City Council and Planning Inspectorate will make the hard decisions.
And First Person this week is Judith Hennigan, who writes about winning citizens in Global Republic of Reading. Michael Gove has hit the headlines again. I'm writing this at the start of a week with the airwaves still buzzing with news of his apparent intervention over the curriculum for GCSE English Literature. Clearly, the Secretary of State for Education favours a British focus for the texts to include Shakespeare, a 19th century novel, the Romantic poets, and post-1914 British novel. The OCR exam board has, as a result, removed John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men and Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, replacing them with Austen and Dickens. The point, Mr. Gove has argued, is that the exam needs to become more rigorous. It's also reported that he holds a strong personal dislike for Steinbeck's classic that asks deep moral questions in its distinctive crafted prose. I'm dismayed for several reasons. First, there is in this issue of rigour. Of course, an exam should be rigorous. It needs to test the knowledge and understanding of all who sit it, including the least and most able students. So why does this necessitate learning only those texts written by British authors from a long time ago? Jane Austen stimulates many readers, including me. But why are her novels better for a 15-year-old's intellectual curiosity than, say, those of Nigerian writer Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie? Rigour should be reflected in the questions that are set in the exam paper. Then there's the issue of engagement. Just like Michael Gove, I'm influenced by my own experience. My two boys were not interested in literature at 14, when children are first introduced to their GCSE test. One read only history books, the other preferred not to read at all. Then they read Of Mice and Men. They didn't enjoy annotating it, and they certainly didn't enjoy sitting their exams. Yet the novel resonated with them all in all kinds of ways. Each went on to seek out other Steinbeck novels, which led to other literary discoveries. Neither chose to study literature at A level. Instead, Steinbeck went one better. He sparked what I hope is a lifelong love of reading. I'm not disputing the inclusion of Shakespeare. My point is that no minister should overprescribe when it comes to books and their writers. Mr. Gove believes he's acting to safeguard intellectual rigour, but I worry that he's confusing excellence with taste, British with ideological expediency. The world of stimulating literature is not a club where only a few who have learned the correct exam technique belong. Neither is it acceptable to design a curriculum based on personal likes and dislikes. Young people should be encouraged to read deeply, widely, promiscuously even. They deserve to arrive as willing citizens in the worldwide republic of reading. And on that note, the best of luck to all who are taking exams over the next few weeks.
This week's announcements begin with several events in and around Winchester. On Tuesday the 3rd of June, the lunchtime concert in Winchester Cathedral from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. is The Great American Songbook, performed by Dan and Laura Curtis. Admission is free with a retiring collection. On Wednesday the 4th of June, there's a talk entitled The Turnpike Road Through the Worthies at St Swithin's Church, Kingsworthy at 3 p.m. The cost is £5, including tea and cake. On Thursday the 5th of June, there's a session on family history for beginners at the Hampshire Record Office from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. The cost is £12 and booking is essential on 01962 846 154. That's 01962 846 154. On Friday the 6th of June, there's a monthly drop-in at the Memory Cafe at the United Church, Jewellery Street, Winchester from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. offering support for dementia. And the same day, Friday the 6th of June, at the Prior's Hall, Winchester Cathedral Close, at 7:30 p.m, there's an evening of music performed by former choristers under the title My Subject is War and the Pity of War. The cost is £10, including a glass of wine, and this event is in aid of the Southern Cathedrals Festival. On Saturday the 7th of June, Winchester Action for Climate Change holds a meeting of comment on targets for renewable energy and greenhouse gas emissions at St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, from 10 a.m. to noon. This will be chaired by Steve Brine, MP. And the same day, Saturday the 7th of June at 7:30 p.m, Rain and Shine present Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice in the garden of the Bishop's Palace. Tickets are £14 and obtainable from by telephoning 03306 600 541. That's 03306 600 541. The display of a tapestry by Grayson Perry continues at the Winchester Discovery Centre, along with an exhibition, Vision of the Past, the Social History of Sight Loss in Hampshire over the last 90 years. And from the 1st to the 8th of June, in the north transept of Winchester Cathedral, there is a painting exhibition and sale, The World of Jane Austen. And during the weekend, the 7th to the 8th of June, the following gardens are open to the public. Beer Mill, London Road, Whitchurch, Froyle Gardens, Froyle, Hinton Ampner House, and Longmead House and Lower Mill, Long Parish. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 30th of May at 4:58 a.m. and begins at 9:08 p.m. On Wednesday the 4th of June, it ends at 4:54 a.m. and begins at 9:14 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Traders celebrate 800 years of market history. Despite thunder looming overhead, the 800th anniversary of Alresford Street Market didn't disappoint. Around 15 stalls offering various crafts and gifts set up shop in Broad Street last Thursday to celebrate 800 years of trading there. Trustee Pam Stevens, the event coordinator, said, "Thankfully, the thunderstorms held off long enough for the storeholders to enjoy their day." She said, "There were a few traders who weren't there, but the Town Trust put on a gazebo of their own with photos from the market back in the day showing sheep farmers and the like. I managed to do a booklet which contains all the history of the market, and I sold all but three copies. The market started in 1214, so during the last 800 years, there have been lots of alterations, which the pictures showed nicely. And there's a lovely picture of a group of the traders. One of them's holding a bowl of food, and another's got a top hat and a large bell. Looks a bit like a town crier.
Think again over 300 homes plan. Hundreds turn out at Alresford public meeting. Hundreds of people told civic chiefs to think again over plans for 300 new homes on the edge of Alresford. The main hall at Perrin's School was packed on Tuesday night as around 500 people voiced strong opposition to proposals to expand the town. Alresford Town Council, which called the meeting, has expressed the view the town needs to grow to secure its long-term future. The audience demanded councillors stand up at the in front of the meeting and state their support for them. Most agreed. Chairman Lisa Griffiths said, "Our job is to represent your views, so that is what we will do." The Winchester local plan currently says that Alresford should have 500 new homes from 2011 to 2031. But resident after resident slammed proposals for the biggest proposed site, farmland off Sun Lane, earmarked for 320 homes, the relocation of industry from the town centre, a new gypsy and travellers site, and with new access off the A31 bypass. A straw poll of people in the hall showed near unanimous opposition to 500 houses in general, and Sun Lane in particular. Jim King of Carpenters said, "With 500 houses, we are jeopardising a key asset. A supermarket will soon follow, the high street will disappear, businesses will struggle with the exception of expensive coffee shops and clothes shops." Colin Tester from Near Sun Lane said the huge development would threaten the town's tourist industry. "What are tourists going to visit building sites? There'll be more cars, not tourists, and the years of contractors' traffic," he said. The meeting heard there'd be increased congestion on the Nursery Road and Tichborne Downs. The schools, GP surgery and dentists would be overcrowded and the town's special atmosphere threatened. But time is running out for any new proposals. The deadline for the draft local plan, part two, is October, with a public examination in April to July 2015 and an inspector's report in November 2015. The meeting heard it was important for an alternative plan to be developed. Dr. Martin Burton of Itchen Stoke, a consultant for World Bank, said, "Unless people stand up to be counted, the City Council and Planning Inspectorate will roll over us. If we don't mobilise, this will go through." He added, "Oldsford's a unique community with a wrong type of new houses for commuters from London. That mixed community will be lost. The real danger is that people leave Perrin School and cannot afford to live in this community." Mike Dowsett of Service Point Motor Engineers said a key part of Sun Lane plan was flawed. He said that some of the firms on the Dean were classified as heavy engineering and so had been unable to relocate the new light industrial site off Sun Lane, which would end up as warehousing. There was cynicism in the hall about the City Council and its stance. "It doesn't matter what we say, they'll do what they want anyway," said one man. There was also widespread opposition to the idea of a traveller's site.
This is headed "Ex-head teacher cleared of sex abuse charges. Family, friends and ex-pupils thanked for their support." A 14-month ordeal for a former Winchester PE teacher ended with two simple words last Friday: not guilty. After retiring for 3 hours, the six men and six women of the jury unanimously cleared Richard Hillary of three charges of historic sexual abuse of a teenage girl. Mr. Hillary, 63, initially showed no emotion as the Winchester Crown Court jury delivered its verdict. But as Judge Susan Evans, QC, said that he was free to leave the dock, he mouthed thank you to them. Smiling, he then shook hands with both dock officers, but no sooner had he stepped out of the courtroom he burst into tears and had to be comforted by his barrister, Alistair Wright. Afterwards, Mr. Hillary paid tribute to his wife, Sheila, apologising for the hurt he had caused her. It is understood that some 400 people, predominantly former pupils, had intended to attend court to support him, but he told them through a social network that he did not want them there. But afterwards, he thanked everyone for the groundswell of backing he had received. In a statement, he said, "I wish to thank everyone for the outstanding levels of support provided to me and my wife during what has been 14 months of hell. Without support of family and friends, especially my wife, I have little doubt I wouldn't have survived the criminal proceedings I faced." He then thanked former pupils, their parents, colleagues and school governors for their backing after the allegations were made public, saying, "I owe them a debt of gratitude and I'm deeply touched by their support, which reaffirms my belief that throughout my career I have strived to do good and help everyone I could." Apologising to his wife, with whom he left court, he said, "I am desperately sorry that my wife has had to endure the past 14 months with me, when many would not. I'm very sorry for the hurt I've caused her. I'm blessed she has forgiven me for all that hurt." Jurors had heard how the former teacher met the girl, who was 15 at the time, at the Farley Mount beauty spot near Winchester. The victim, whose identity cannot be revealed, claimed that Mr. Hillary had sexually assaulted her three times when he was 28, and a teacher at Winchester's Montgomery of Alamein School, now part of King's. "It did happen," she insisted to the court, rejecting suggestions that he had made up the allegations. Mr. Hillary, of North End Lane, Droxford, described it as completely reprehensible that he had deliberately not told the police the truth when he denied meeting the girl. He later admitted that he had met her on a few occasions outside school and had once kissed her.
Could rats have been the cause of house fire? A blaze that damaged a historic farmhouse in Cheriton was probably caused by rodents gnawing through cables. Some 50 firefighters worked through Sunday night to save North End farmhouse. Fire investigators on Monday found the origin of the fire was most likely in the roof, where rats or mice had chewed PVC insulation on electrical cabling. The fire service was alerted by a 999 call just after 9:05 in the evening, reporting the roof well alight on the property on North End Lane. The first firefighters on the scene discovered the fire spreading into the first floor of the T-shaped two-storey house. Jets and hose reels were used on the flames, along with the aerial ladder platform, and crews managed to salvage much of the house's contents. The roof and first floor were badly damaged by fire, while around half the ground floor was damaged by water. The fire was out by 4:30 a.m. The house is believed to have had 8 people inside, 4 adults and 4 children. Smoke was spotted when one of them went upstairs. As the root of the fire was in the roof of the fire alarm... I beg your pardon. As the root of the fire was in the roof, the fire alarms are not believed to have activated before it was discovered. One dialed 999 and they all got out safely and no one was hurt. The owner, Lizzie Ayling, declined on Monday to comment, except to say she would be writing to the fire service to thank them for their efforts. Station manager Mark Budden, incident commander, said, "The first crew on the scene put in place a really good plan, which ultimately saved much of the roof and top floor of the rest of the building. The firefighters really worked their guts out to stop the fire spreading and salvage much of the owner's property from the house." There is a picture of the firefighters tackling the blaze with half of the roof gone and the cottage looks quite devastated.
Punters' anger after publicans disappear. Mystery surrounds the closure of a pub near Winchester after the landlord is suspected to have abandoned it in the middle of the night. The Trout Inn in Itchen Abbas has been closed for nearly a month after the tenants left suddenly. Itchen Valley Parish Council Clerk Viv Brooks said, "At the last council meeting at the beginning of May, someone said that the managers had absconded in the middle of the night. That's all we know at this stage." One villager left a chalk notice by the door. "Closed. They bloody left without telling us. The village. And a kiss." Kim Gottlieb, city councillor for the Itchen Valley, said, "We were very unhappy to see it close. It's quite a tricky one because the brewery needs to get the formula just right. It's not about offering a good pint and decent food. It's got to serve a much wider community now because of the competition is so fierce. The village will be very disappointed if it closes down completely. We've got some other good pubs in the area not far away, but it would be a big shame if it were to close. I know the village are keen to see it reopen, and I hope the new landlord will bring something new. It's had a patchy history, but we're lucky to have a number of good pubs all over the place." A spokesman for Green King said, "Unfortunately, the Trout closed earlier this month, May, for reasons beyond our control. However, we wish to reassure locals and customers that it is an important pub to us, and we're now in the process of recruiting a new tenant who will take the Trout forward. We plan to reopen it in July, following a refurbishment throughout the pub, its bedrooms and the garden."
And here's a light-hearted article. It's headed, "Catwalk Judges Deliver Their Verdicts on Fashion." Just for once, Winchester Crown Court shrugged off the sombre air of a building in which murderers are jailed and instead echoed to the sounds of uproarious laughter. In order to raise money for its witness support service, solicitors, ushers, cleaners, probation officers, security staff and even judges, they shed their robes and suits to model vintage designs for a charity fashion show. With clothes supplied by Winchester outfitters Vintage Hound and Stardust Years, The court's first floor gallery was transformed into a catwalk lined with 180 guests clutching glasses of bubbly as staff sashayed and strutted and struck the occasional pose. Sylvia Anderson Lewis, the court's receptionist, chivied her models along while whirring through notes on her clipboard to find the correct description for the frock suits and Hawaiian shirts being shown. "Pause while I find the right place. Give 'em a whirl," she urged Judge Keith Cutler, who obliged with a gentle flourish. While the event was light-hearted, the cause for which they were raising money is not. Winchester's Crown Court is the most senior in the Western Circuit, with around 20 murder trials held there each year, as well as major rape, robbery and fraud cases. The Witness Services team of volunteers support vulnerable witnesses before and after they give evidence. Witness Support Manager Carolyn Martin said the event raised £3,000, which will be used to further train her band of 30 volunteers. And here we have three photographs of the participants. And if you remember in a previous article on Richard Hillary, the presiding judge was Judge Susan Evans, QC. Well, here she is in a beautiful purple outfit, looking far from a presiding judge, absolutely elegant. And His Honour Keith Cutler in a Hawaiian shirt of orange and a not-matching fedora of red and faded jeans. And the final one is not named, but he's certainly got some attitude, in the loudest Hawaiian shirt I think I've ever seen.
Ofsted verdict, good news for Stanmore. Parents, teachers and pupils in Winchester are celebrating after an education watchdog rated their school as good. Ofsted inspectors commended the quality of teaching across Stanmore Primary School, particularly reception classes, where they said the interaction between adults and children was excellent. The report said the school has undergone a period of rapid improvement over the past 18 months, especially to the quality of teaching and the rate at which pupils make progress. It also said all pupils had a good attitude to learning and listened with respect during lessons, and the school's work in keeping pupils safe and secure was outstanding. Head teacher Justine Brooks paid tribute to her staff and pupils. "I am so pleased Ofsted recognised the strengths of our school, our exciting and stimulating curriculum, the progress made by pupils, and our polite, courteous and sociable children. I am proud of my hard-working staff and pupils, and it's fantastic that Ofsted have given them the recognition they deserve." Jo Good, a parent of children in years 1, 3 and 6, said, "I'm delighted all the hard work from the staff at Stanmore has been reflected in this fantastic Ofsted report. My three boys have always been so happy at school." Chairman of Governors, Sarah Taylor, said she was delighted with the rating, considering the new tougher Ofsted criteria. "It's wonderful the report has recognised some of the many qualities of our school, in particular the excellent leadership of our head teacher and senior team, not to mention the impact made by all our teachers and support staff to ensure all our pupils achieve their full potential. The early years department has now been highlighted by both Ofsted and Hampshire County Council as having many outstanding elements, which established a superb foundation for our pupils. We are very proud our pupils were recognised for their positive attitude to learning, good behaviour, politeness and courtesy. They are exceptional ambassadors for our school.
City planners not convinced by a couple's business dream. A Winchester couple say their farming dream is under threat from planners. Trevor and Ruth Wyatt bought a rundown poultry unit with mobile home and aim to raise chickens for the pet trade as well as selling eggs to the public. Mr. Wyatt, 49, and his wife Ruth, 45, have been living at the 21-acre Hare Farm off Main Road, Twyford, for 18 months. But City Council planners are unconvinced the business is viable, and officers are recommending their bid for a 3-year licence for a mobile home to be rejected. They say the business doesn't need to be run from the farm itself. Mr. Wyatt, a former photocopying engineer, hopes the council will give them time to show that the business can be viable. This is our dream, our passion, he said. This is what we want to do. Mrs. Wyatt said her interest stemmed from taking on some rescued battery hens. I enjoy having the birds. I want to help other people enjoy their animals. I wanted something that I knew I could do well, she said. The couple sold their house in Locks Heath, cashed in insurance, and sold their cars to pay £325,000 for the small holding. Now they have around 750 chickens, as well as ducks, geese, quail, and 10 sheep. All the birds are free range. Mr. Wyatt said this was not an attempt to build a house in the countryside. We're quite happy living in a mobile home. We'll never build a house here. We'll never make enough money. That's not the be-all and end-all. The mobile home is comfortable enough. Villagers are overwhelmingly supportive, with scores of expressions of support logged with the City Council. Mr. Wyatt added, no one's objected. We're not doing anything noisy, offensive, or making smells or noise. It's a matter of making the farm viable and to fit in with the community. We want to integrate the business with the three villages of Twyford, Colden Common and Shawford, with the schools. All we want is a little bit of leeway from the council, a three-year temporary licence to show we can develop the business, he said. A council spokesman said, planning officers are in discussion with the applicants and have advised them to withdraw their application at this time so that they can develop a stronger business case. And there's a photograph of the couple, each with a holding a chicken, one dark and one light, and it says, left, Trevor and Ruth Wyatt want to raise chickens at their 21-acre farm but have run into difficulties with Winchester planners.
I've got Westminster Diary. This is Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Last month I wrote about the subject of primary school places, and my advice was not to panic if you haven't been offered your first choice. Get your appeal in, contact me as your MP, and remember, things can often change. As you can imagine, I have subsequently done a lot of casework in recent weeks, but happily, I have been able to make some of the best phone calls to let parents know, in their case, things have changed. I pay great tribute to a handful of individual schools, including Itchen Abbas and Colden Common, who both showed real leadership in accommodating demand for this September, and to Hampshire, who have solved every problem I took to them. This painstaking work, combined with the expansion plans we have in the pipeline across the area, including at Week Primary School, which I saw for myself recently, mean we're in good shape for September 2014 entry, and I'm proud of our progress. As we await the Queen's speech and the new session, Parliament hasn't sat much recently, but I don't think I've been busier in more than 4 years in post. Bringing the Prime Minister's flood envoy to Winchester was an important part of my post-flooding efforts, and I am due to meet the Minister in London shortly to reinforce what he saw here. The family and I attended the Save the Wreck Grand Day Out at River Park this month, and other than a lovely family day, it was, I hope, a reminder to the new City Council that this campaign will not go away, and of the need to think of the much bigger picture when it comes to leisure and sporting provision across the whole district. I have also had really great visits lately with the hugely impressive young people at Christchurch in Winchester and the boys at Lakeside School in Chandler's Ford. What do I learn from these very different encounters? Our teenagers are worried about their future, under great pressures to shine in it, but full of enthusiasm, grace, energy, and questions. Finally, this year's election season has been one of the great change for many, but in my constituency it's been a continuation of what's been happening these last 5 years. There have been many pleasing results for me in the past week. New councillors elected, comfortable support for our referendum policy at the European elections, but above all, engagement in the process. Congratulations to all those who got elected. I look forward to working with them. And long live the King to those who didn't quite make it this time. See you next year. More details of my work, locally and in Westminster, via stevebryne.com, and that's Steve Bryne, lowercase, all one word, .com, or on 01962 791 110. 01962 79 1110.
A contractor has been told to clean up its act over the state of public toilets in Winchester. Councillors have spoken about unmet schedules and unclean toilets across the district, including Winchester city centre. The cleaning, which is contracted to three companies, is under close observation by the Winchester City and East Hampshire councils, who say they may be forced to look at alternatives if they do not see improvements over the next 3 months. Rob Heathcock, Assistant Director of High Quality Environment at Winchester City Council, said the main problem is with Superclean. He said, "The issue at the moment is the toilet cleaning contract. They are putting a recovery plan in place and we want them to make some improvements. There are a series of actions that the contractor should do on a regular basis, including deep cleans every now and then, but we aren't happy with the current standard of cleaning. They are just not sticking to the schedules." Councillor Chris Pine said that in certain situations, locations are in poor states of repair, making cleaning difficult. "The Brook toilets have had leaks and been flooded and not repaired," he said. "They have had to keep them closed while repairs are being done. If it was me and I was desperate to go to the loo and I found it closed, I would be pretty annoyed. I think there is dissatisfaction. We want the highest standard for our own folk and visitors, and we are not prepared to compromise." A recent joint scrutiny committee of both councils also heard how some bins are left unemptied for weeks at a time, with litter becoming a costly problem. Mr. Heathcock added, "Over the next 3 months, we expect them to stick to and deliver the plan, and if they don't, we will see what the alternatives are. One of those alternatives is to effectively cease the contract." Councillor David McLean, who represents Bishop's Waltham, urged people to report anything they see to the council for investigation. "The real world is that there are bits of it that are being done extremely well and bits that need some work doing," he said. "If they are reported to the department, they will be looked at immediately. That needs to be said because the council are extremely proactive on this and we are working damn hard." The Hampshire Chronicle contacted Superclean at its head office in Lincolnshire, but no one was prepared to comment.
Bid to formalise airstrips use. Landowners near Winchester want permission to regularise the use of a grass airstrip. The application to Winchester City Council would see the land at Crawley Down off Worth Andover Road lawfully certified as a recreational airfield. Known as the Barton Ashes Airfield, the site near Crawley already has two 800-metre strips and has been used for 12 years. It operates on the 28-day rule, which means an airstrip does not need a licence for flights if it is in use less than 28 days a year. Paul Grellier, who runs the airstrip next to his aircraft engineering business, said, "I rent a field from my landlord, David Butler, and we started a small airstrip there. He decided to go for a change of use there so we can use it more. It's purely recreational and for people's pleasure." The site is currently used by Group A aircraft, including Microlights, and Mr. Grellier said he is concerned that local residents would be worried about the application. "We are very careful about keeping it low-key so that we don't upset anybody. It's not going to turn into a Heathrow. There'll still be a couple of trips a week, but a few more in the summer. It's not busy at all." David Selby, chairman of South Wanston Parish Council, said, "I don't think anybody's made any complaints. I didn't know it was there. I think the parish council might have something to say about it, and I'll be drawing it to their attention." The landowner, David Butler, who applied for the lawfulness certificate, was unavailable for comment.
And this next item is about the glorious Chelsea Flower Show, and local connections, Grower's Golden Show at RHS Chelsea, County's top horticulturalist celebrate awards. Hampshire's top gardeners have scooped awards at the Chelsea Flower Show. Winchester's Sparsholt College was among those celebrating after their display not only won a gold award, but was also crowned Best Royal Horticultural Society Discovery Exhibit. A team of 21 horticultural students have spent 9 months preparing the garden entitled Paper Chase, which shows how paper cups can be recycled into compost, which could be used to grow more trees. The college has won 6 gold medals, 3 silver gilts, 4 silver and 3 bronze medals at the show since 1998. The team have worked very hard over the last 9 months, and for their huge efforts to result in a gold medal and to be the best discovery exhibit is absolutely tremendous. How better for these students to start their horticultural careers than as proud RHS Chelsea medal winners? Meanwhile, Hillier Nurseries, which has already been crowned the show's most successful exhibitor, scooped its 69th consecutive gold medal for its exhibit inspired by the history of the Romsey Nurseries to mark its 150th anniversary. Managing Director Andrew McIndoe, who writes a regular garden section for the Hampshire Chronicle, said, "We are absolutely thrilled to have won gold in our 150th anniversary year. This year is a huge milestone for Hillier, and winning over our 69th consecutive gold is a fantastic recognition of the skills, expertise and dedication of everyone at Hillier's nurseries and garden centres." Hillier's Chelsea exhibit is actually a series of smaller gardens inspired by the history of Hillier, but given a contemporary twist. It's packed with ideas and planting schemes that today's gardeners could recreate in their own gardens. Hillier Nurseries and Garden Centres also clinched Plant of the Year after entering a Hydrangea macrophylla, Miss Siori. And as you might expect, a garden is illustrated here. Beautiful, I'm sure better in colour than it shows, but the Hillier family kneeling, posing around it, looking, of course, incredibly proud.
University climbs the rankings. The University of Winchester has been rated as one of the top universities in the country in 2 independent surveys within the space of a week. On May the 12th, the Complete University Guide for 2015 ranked it 59 out of 123 UK universities. And on May the 15th, the Times Higher Education Student Experience Survey 2014 ranked it 18th of 111, up 15 places on last year. The Times survey was carried out between October 2012 and June 2013 and saw 14,300 full-time undergraduates across the country take part. Classed as a modern university established after 1992, Winchester is placed 9th nationally and 2nd best in the southeast. In addition, it ranks well for student satisfaction, equal 16th nationally and 4th in the southeast.
Please back our bid for a new home, say the Scouts. Winchester Scouts have been petitioning local families to help support them in their quest to find a new home. Children and parent helpers of the 6th Winchester Scout Group gathered at River Park Leisure Centre on Friday to put flyers through the doors of houses in Hyde and surrounding streets, supported by their borrowed mascot, Chip the Beaver. The group hopes to put in a bid for land off Nuns Walk at Abbots Barton to build a camping area, climbing tower and play area, and a scout hut, which will also be used as a preschool and adult health day centre. As a report in July last year, the Scouts approached Winchester City Council's Barton Farm Forum pleading for green space. As a result, the Scout movement, growing at 5 times the national average, with the figures from their recent census, showed a 10% rise against 1.9% nationally. Scout leaders have said it's imperative to find more space. District Commissioner Stephen Parker said, "This all started a year ago after we had started to recruit parents as Beaver leaders. We had a lot of interest from parents and their children to join the Scouts and so formed the 6th Winchester Group. At the moment, they all meet in St Luke's Church Hall. What's going to happen is that we're going to need more space to accommodate more children as the schools grow. We've gone from 24 now to expecting some 48 in September. We'll grow over time and they need a home." The group's website said, "Every young person, Abbots Barton and Hyde, who wants to be a Beaver, Cub or Scout should be able to do so. For many years this has not been possible. Just like most other Scout groups, we need our own home to protect our new group for the next 80 to 100 years. This requires a large building on a site appropriate for 21st century scouting." And there's a very jolly picture of three ladies and a rather strange thing, which I suppose is Chip the Beaver. It looks more like a bear. And they're all wearing their scarves with woggles and smiling.
And another item on the election. Disloyal Lib Dems attacked by ex-MP. Former Winchester MP Mark Oughton has criticised his successors for their attack on Liberal Democrat Party leader Nick Clegg. Mr Oughton said Martin Todd and Jackie Porter were disloyal by calling on Mr Clegg to stand down after the poor results from the European and local government elections. He said, "I totally disagree with Martin and Jackie calling for Nicky to resign. I'm sorry that they have both chosen to be disloyal to their leader in this way. These were very tough elections, but Nick did the right thing to take on UKIP and to stand up for both the coalition and our European views.